Thank you, Max, for that marvelous introduction.
I'll say it's a buy, up or maybe up and die.
I'll say it's a buy.
Sights to show you.
Improv, baby.
Which I think is so interesting because it goes to show, like, improv versus, like, me, which is, like, so academic. Like, yeah. Everything I do is based so much in academics where I'm just like, I need the entire fucking picture before I even say anything because, well, I don't want to be wrong.
You were in school much more recently than I have.
True. Been, so that's true. Also true. I remember semi-recent grad. It's been 2 years.
Oh, it's only two?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Well, 2017.
I'm glad you're making money. That's nice. ready? Ready?
Yes,
fuck
yes,
it.
Yes,
let's
yes.
go.
Okay.
Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to the 50th episode of the Horrible People's Podcast.
50 episodes. Holy shit.
It's our 50th fucking episode.
Oh, my God. Guys, we did it.
Yeah. I am your host, Alex Webster. And as always, I am joined by sleepy and yet still happy to be here, kind of caffeinated, Anthony Fuentes. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. This is actually the same kind of, like, body function that I have when I'm, like, whiskied out and also high. So,
okay,
yeah.
Cool. It'll be
where
a fun
like
episode.
Where it's, like, tired, but also lucid and energetic for some reason, yeah.
Cool, I'm really
just
excited.
Just disregarding my body, you know?
Yeah. So, last night when I was watching Peaky Blinders, I had made food really, really late, and then I got really, really high, and I was just, like, basically cemented to my bed
my
watching Peaky Blinders, just like, oh my God. So, yeah, I can kind of relate.
Yeah.
So,
no,
that was my night.
I was in Little Tokyo trying to stay up and, like, be, like, young me, and, like, I can be out, and then by 11:30 I'm like, please go home, please go home. And then I knocked out as soon as I got home. Like,
yeah, that's great.
Like, fast.
That's so funny. I guess I'm just, like, in my 30s at heart, because, like, that's me now. Like, I'm just like, fuck that.
I'm in my 20s at heart, but my body is definitely in its 30s right now. So, yeah, we're covering a fucking amazing film that we've been wanting to cover for, like, months.
Yeah, we've been the second I was like, hey, let's cover this movie, mm-hmm. and then Anthony and I decided to make it our 50th episode.
50th episode.
We were
that
just
was
like,
done early on. Yeah,
like, this has been our decided 50th episode forever. We are covering the 1993 Disney film, Hocus Pocus.
Oh, shit. I bought the Blu-ray for this one.
Expecting
better special features, to be honest with you.
Really? They weren't great?
It's Disney. They don't give a shit.
Well, also, this is in, like, 93, so, like, the special features probably weren't that fantastic, because this was also, like, a direct-to-Disney film.
What do you mean?
Like, they didn't, from what I remember, anyway, uh-huh. They showed it just on Disney Channel.
No, it was in theaters.
Was it in theaters?
It was in theaters.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
See, that's actually something we're going to get into. Like, yeah, okay, see, because I wrote this one, guys, so this is, like, a lot of new information is going to be coming to Alex, but yeah, yeah. This was in theaters.
Oh, yeah, I had no idea, because all I remember is watching it, like, on Disney Channel.
It does
always
have
on Disney Channel.
Direct-to-Disney Channel feel, but there's a reason for that as well.
It was also directed by Kenny Ortega.
Yep. Yeah,
who did, like,
High School Musical,
and did, like, a bunch of other, like, Disney, like, original films.
Descendants. He's a Disney in-house director.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we'll, of course, get into a little bit of Kenny Ortega here, too. But, yeah, so this is a big nostalgia pick for us. It's one of the best Halloween films ever. I would say Halloween is still the best Halloween film.
Oh, takes place on Halloween?
If I'm actually encompassing all of Halloween films, this is up there, for sure.
Definitely top
five. Definitely top five. I would say top three, honestly. I fucking love this film, dude. But
I don't know. I might like this more than Halloween. I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, you know my history.
Right. Well, purely from a nostalgia factor, because, like, also I didn't watch Halloween as a child, so it doesn't have that.
I totally did.
Right. So it doesn't have that nostalgic factor to me versus, like, something like Hocus Pocus, where I'm just like, this is, like, absolutely a nostalgic thing for me. So
We'll have to do a John Carpenter versus Kenny Ortega one. High School Musical, the thing. But let's get into our IMDb synopsis here. So, of course, you know, I always do this, but a curious youngster moves to Salem, where he struggles to fit in before awakening a trio of diabolical witches that were executed in the 17th century.
This is the shittiest synopsis.
This is kind of lame.
A curious youngster moves to Salem, which also, like, that first line itself, I'm just like, this is shit.
He's not curious. I mean, he is kind of curious, but he's more of an asshole, really.
He's not curious in, like, the way that, like, Max is curious. Like, yeah. He's just kind of just like, I like this girl, let's go, like,
yeah,
you know?
I'm curious to get in these goddamn pants over there. Yeah, that's what he is.
That's what he's curious about. He's, you know?
Like, he's Hollywood.
Like, and also, they just moved to Salem, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Which is, like, awesome, mm-hmm. first of all. So, growing up watching this, I was just like, I want to move to Salem.
Oh, dude, it fit that Halloween vibe so much. And he's like, Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, also, growing up in California, like, you don't get towns that look like that out here.
No, that's true. And as a lifelong Californian, yeah, you kind of felt like, oh, fuck you. Like,
I want that so bad. Like, I would love, just a little town that, like, loves Halloween that much. Like, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Also, it's California. I'm sure there's some town that we can find in between here and the Central Coast that has, like, a special Halloween thingy. But also, it's not going to be the same.
It's not going to be the same, first of all. Also, every year around Halloween, it's still, like, 90 degrees out.
Ah, that's true. Yeah. Like, yeah. We don't get, like, gusts of wind and fall leaves for a little bit. Yeah.
Not at least until, like, mid-November. Yeah. Like, it takes a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. But this one was written by David Kirshner, who did the story, and then Mick Garris, who did the story and the screenplay, and then Neil Cuthbert. Cut guy. He did the screenplay as well, but, I mean, this is actually kind of misleading, which we'll get into.
All right.
There was many more writers. So this is directed, of course, by Kenny Ortega, one of the in-house Disney fucking, like, primetime directors.
Yeah.
Who's done a lot of their shit. And it stars a pretty badass cast, actually.
Yeah.
Starting with Bette motherfucking Midler.
Yeah.
Sarah Jessica Parker. Kathy Najimy. Omri Katz. I fucking hate this guy's name. Thora Birch. And then Vanessa Shaw. And then this one, but box office, because it was released in theaters, it was budgeted at $28 million, released in July 18th of 1993. Stupid fucking move right there, right away. And it grossed $39 million, just a little bit over $39 million. So, obviously not the biggest hit, which is going to play into our little story here later. But, this one was very, very heavily inspired by somebody we talk about frequently on this podcast. So, Alex, bring us in on how Hocus Pocus got started.
Heck yeah. So David Kirshner, a name you might recognize from this podcast, has had an amazing career in Hollywood with a dynamic list of films under his belt, going from An American Tale to the original Child's Play. We've mentioned his work before on this podcast. Check out Child's Play for more information.
Yep, and one and two, yes.
Before going on to make such well-recognized films, he had a brief chance to make a film with Disney and was inspired by a little story he would tell his daughters at night before bed, inspired by a feline friend from his past.
Ooh.
Dun dun dun.
What friend?
When he was a kid, he had taken in a black cat and named him Inks, and soon began to develop a little story about him. Like all filmmakers, he held on to this story over the years, but it was always just that, a little story.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, Kirshner would have two daughters and raise them in a home that relished in Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
My man.
Quote coming up, but, like, this dude is about Halloween, like, hard.
Yeah. So, on this, Kirshner actually says, Halloween is a huge deal in our home, and it has been since our daughters were little. It speaks to me in a way that becomes so emotional for me and always has.
I think you can kind of feel this in the film.
Definitely.
You can kind of feel it.
Well, like, we were just talking about it, right? Like, you can tell, like, this, it's, like, this sleepy little town that, like, loves Halloween, mm-hmm. genuinely, like, has, like, everyone there celebrates it. Even, like, the bullies are, like, having fun.
Yeah, and people are, like, believing the legends and, like, oh, you don't buy into this? Like, this is our fucking town, son.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, even the teacher, like, you know, is dressed up for Halloween. Everyone's...
with your tie-dye fucking California.
Here to grace us with your tie-dye, laid-back California point of view. Like, every time I'm just like, yes, you absolute queen.
That's why I liked Max, though, because I was a California kid, so I was like, and, you know, young me was like, yeah, my tie-dye California opinion, fuck you.
That's true. Also, like, I'd be in California, and I'd be like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It'll rain over here.
Yeah. So,
sadly, sometimes.
One day, as he was spending time with his daughters outside, they spotted their neighbor's black cat, and Kirshner used it as an opportunity to tell his daughters of the feline's backstory. His story was that the cat was actually a boy from the 17th century who was transformed into the creature by three witches after he attempted to save his sister from their clutches.
Mm.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, a little bit.
Eventually, the witches would be put to death by the townspeople, but the boy would be cursed to live forever as a feline until the witches were eventually returned to life on Halloween, thanks to the lighting of a black-flamed candle. Sounds strangely familiar.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did a really good job. Like, just that structure is very, like, folky. And I think, like... That's why he's so good at Halloween. Like, he actually, he knows how to structure. He's a filmmaker, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
This story became a bedtime staple in the Kirshner household, but this future producer felt he had something with it, and his wife agreed and said he should try to turn it into a film. First, Kirshner submitted the story to Muppet Magazine, and it managed to gain some recognition. With this little bit of traction, it was time to look for a meeting.
Muppet Magazine? What the f- I didn't even bother to look into what that was.
I have
was
no, like, fucking clue.
It's like, cool, Muppet Magazine. I guess Kermit's going to be on every other issue.
I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea what that is, but all right.
90s, 80s, actually, 80s. Yeah. Cool.
Kirshner had just made a name for himself by convincing Steven Spielberg to make An American Tale and had a bit of clout in Hollywood. So he took his idea to Disney, who agreed to meet with him.
Yeah.
So at least he got that far.
Yeah. But
although,
I mean,
this day and age, Disney would have been just like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
I'm sorry. What superhero is going to be in this movie? None?
No. We're
maybe
good.
On Freeform.
When it came time to finally deliver the big pitch to the studio sometime in 1984, Kirshner went all out.
Oh, yeah.
He dazzled up the meeting room with all kinds of Halloween decor, hanging brooms from the ceiling, covering the table with candy corn, spilling from a 15-pound bag, and displaying hand-drawn pictures of black cats all around the room, which he commissioned from the kids in his neighborhood.
Dude knows how to do Halloween. Like, just that meeting, I want to see it. I want to see that fucking meeting room.
Also, that is so much fucking candy corn. Good Lord.
He said that, it was a big 15-pound bag of candy corn, and he just, like, cut a slit in the front, and it just poured out, and he let that pouring just go all amongst part of the meeting room, the table.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he went pretty detailed on this shit.
Oh my gosh. So he went about his pitch and explained that the story would work because Halloween was becoming more popular, and families needed a film they could all watch together, and that it would be profitable.
Most important thing for the suits to fucking hear right there.
Yeah. And so, first and foremost, that it would be profitable.
Yeah.
When the meeting ended, Kirshner made his way to the parking lot, but was stopped by an executive who urged him not to take the project anywhere else. Disney wanted to do it. Yay!
Yeah.
So Kirshner agreed and kept the project with Disney, who sat on it for almost a decade.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, around 8 years, actually, I think it was. So, yeah. That's some Disney. They're just like, we kind of want to do this idea, but we're going to just jerk your chain until, like, we think it's really marketable.
Yeah. So, just, you know, don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But we're not going to let you go anywhere.
Stay the fuck away from Universal. Stay the fuck away from Universal. Which, again, is actually going to come in handy right here, too. Finally having a chance to bring to life a story he had been building since he had a cat named Inks, Kirshner got to work and was given a title for his ambitious new project. The title was Disney's Halloween House. It's kind of stupid. So he had brought the idea to Spielberg, actually, in an attempt to get him to work with Disney and getting the project off the ground. But the famous director had actually refused, as he saw Disney as one of his chief rivals at the time, because he had Amblin.
Right.
And he wanted to do animation and all this stuff, and Disney was like, the big dog, and he was like, fuck Disney. I mean, this is also during the time of Don Bluth, too, who was also left Disney and was fucking with them as well. So it's a contentious time for animation. Even though they had just worked on An American Tale, again with Don Bluth, actually, Kirshner had to do this one on his own. The producer then enlisted the help of one of Spielberg's writers by the name of Mick Garris, who worked on the director's TV show, Amazing Stories. So this is still, they're still buds. You know, he's still letting him take one of his writers to get it done. But Garris got to work on the screenplay, which fleshed out the story and included the modern-day storyline where the kids would take on the youth-obsessed sisters in the modern day with the help of Thackeray Binks.
Ah.
A little adjustment there. Yeah, see, that's why you hire this fucking guy. but then came the rewrites. Quite a lot of them, in fact, actually. The reason for so many rewrites is that the original draft was much, much darker than the final film.
Which, okay, pause. Yes. Because Hocus Pocus, as I was watching it as an adult, like a full-fledged adult, I'm like, this movie, for a children's movie, is surprisingly dark.
Yeah, me and Sydney were noticing that when we were watching it the other day. Like, we were just like, oh, there's like death.
No, I'm just, because also,
and like, virgins.
Like, there's virgins, but also, like, Emily, the dead sister, I'm like, she's dead. She's in a chair.
In a chair, and the, like, witches are celebrating.
She's fucking, like, bent over dead, and I'm just,
and
like,
pale as shit.
And
dude.
Just, like, and I'm like, I didn't, what? And I was like, what? And I was okay with that.
I know, that's what I was thinking too. Little kid me was just like, oh yeah, she's fucking dead. Like, what?
Well, because also, even watching it now, I had a hard time putting that together. I'm like, is she actually dead? Mm-hmm. And then, like, she's a fucking ghost by the end of the movie. So I'm like, oh my god, she's, like, straight up fucking dead.
Well, the weird thing is, like, this is not off screen. She's dead in frame. She's dead in frame for a lot of this first part, which is, I think, I remember when I was younger, the beginning was so gripping. Like, it was really gripping, and I think that why. Child death, you're like, those witches can get me.
Okay, so Sean Murray, who plays, like, human Thackeray Bates, who goes on to play McGee in NCIS.
Really? Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get into this. Well, I might as well get into it now.
Do it. Fuck it.
I had to tweet about it because as I'm watching it, because I didn't make this connection again because I haven't seen this movie in many, 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 many years. That opening, like, the cold open, or actually it wasn't a cold open, but, like, that opening
pre-title,
scene.
Pre-title, yeah.
Yeah, pre... title, it wasn't, because the title was the very first thing, so it wasn't even a cold open. Point is that beginning opening sequence, I was, like, super, super young. I don't know why. I don't know what was going on with me at the time. Maybe because it's just middle school. Mm. But, like, I had such a crush on Thackeray Binks as a child.
Oh, you did?
I thought he was so hot.
Oh, my. You were, like, not alone, actually, because Thora Birch totally had a fucking crush on Sean Murray, which I didn't include in the script. But,
really?
Yeah, she actually fucking was, like adored Sean Murray on set. And she was like, tell me stories.
Of course, because he's, like, super, super cute. Point is, and as I'm watching this, I'm like, is that Sean Murray?
Is that why I get a little tingly when I watch the NCIS? Is that?
I tweeted about it as I was watching it, as I was just like, the way middle school me wanted to boink Thackeray Binks, and then watching it now as an adult being like, you fucking idiot, that's McGee. Like, I think that was my tweet in one word or another.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I was just like, this is ridiculous. And so that's my fun fact that I've been holding on to and waiting for the podcast to share with you.
Oh, the word Thackeray Binks. Hey, by the way, I wanted to fuck Sean Murray. Okay. Back to the script. The slapstick elements were not present in this earliest version of the script, by the way. And the protagonists were actually 12 years old rather than 16. So the basic framework was actually the same in this first part of the script, but the tone was far more, quote-unquote, fright-inducing, according to Mick Garris. I mean, it was still a Disney film. It was still kind of funny, whatever, but, like, it was a darker 80s Disney film during their more confusing pre-Renaissance time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a whole different beast early on. But the film was now titled Hocus Pocus and meant to be a feature on the Disney Channel rather than a theatrical film, which might explain the tone a little bit. But they still couldn't quite nail that Disney Channel tone because, again, too fucking dark. By the end of this run, Disney had brought on about 11 writers to work on the project, and each pass at the script would attempt to lighten up the film until it was something more, quote-unquote, according to Mick Garris, broadly comedic. And the production stalled a lot, which is why this was in development hell for almost a decade. And it seems like there wasn't much interest in the film or the tale of Thackeray Binks after all, until a certain Oscar-winning actress named Bette motherfucking Midler found herself with a copy of the script and very much interested.
Yay, so, Bette Midler!
Let's get this bitch off the ground, Alex.
Yay!
Let us know what happened.
So, Bette Midler had just received her second Academy Award nomination for The Boys and was on a career high.
Yeah, she was hot shit.
Yeah. At some point during this, the script for Hocus Pocus made its way to her, and she immediately loved it. She signed on to play the lead witch, Winifred, a part originally written for Cloris Leachman.
Yeah, so they had Oscar winners on the mind early on.
They were aiming high.
They had that Disney money right there. They were backing,
yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
With Midler on board, Disney suddenly went on into fast-track mode and promoted the film from Disney Channel original movie to full theatrical release. And now they needed a cast.
Which, as always, there's always a little tale there. This is a fun one, though.
I know, but this also makes a lot of sense about why it has that Disney original movie feel, but apparently it had a theatrical release.
Well, because I think, you know, Disney Channel films aren't as big in scope, and this is a very contained film. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has a very big scope in the beginning, but it is a Salem story, you know?
Yeah,
which theatrical films are all over the goddamn place.
That's true.
Yeah.
Needing a lead to play opposite Midler, Disney offered the role of Max to the up-and-coming Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh my gosh.
DiCaprio says Disney offered him more money than he ever dreamed of, but the 18-year-old had different ambitions, and promptly turned Mickey's ass down to instead star in What's Eating Gilbert Grape, which earned him an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor.
Damn.
Probably a good choice on Leonardo DiCaprio's part.
Dude, I would love to see Leo.
I would have loved it. Dude, it would have been awesome.
I know. But he's Leo.
Yeah. Like, I mean, again, the career of, like, by choosing What's Eating Gilbert Grape versus Hocus Pocus, like, two different career paths.
He made that early Leo decision on to be like, I'm not going to start a franchise, I'm not going to start in sequels, I'm going to do big fucking Academy movies. And he did it. He slapped Disney in the fucking face to get that shit done.
Yeah.
That's early Leo right there, but mm-hmm. he would have made a great Max. I'm sorry, like, he would have been the shit.
Oh, yeah, it would have been great. I definitely can see a very young Leo.
Yeah.
I can see that. They instead gave the part to Omri Katz, who was known for the soap opera Dallas, which I don't know anything about.
Yeah, that's an old legacy kind of show, yeah.
Well, I also just know nothing about soap operas, nothing. Yeah. I only watched them ever when I was homesick.
Yeah, my grandma would put them on a lot, especially mm-hmm. during summer breaks.
Ah.
So I was into soap operas for 3 months out of the year, for sure. Not Dallas, though, not Dallas.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you had to clarify.
All my children, though, my God.
he initially thought he wasn't going to get the part because he was sick when he auditioned, which, aw.
I think that might have helped. Him, they're like, okay, this kid is obviously good as playing like a lame motherfucker, so let's get him in there.
Yeah. The studio had then cast Sarah Jessica Parker and Kathy
I know, it's a hard one. Najimy.
Najimy?
Najimy? Najimy?
I don't know. I never looked up the pronunciation.
I was watching special features. I think it's Najimy. That's, okay. People just say that.
Okay, Najimy.
It's probably really pronounced differently, but okay. Holly was just like, yeah, Kathy Najimy.
who both had already a few hits under their belt with movies like Footloose and Sister Act.
Yeah, they were 90s fucking gold right there. Definitely. Too, man.
Najimy lucked out as the part was originally offered to Rosie O'Donnell, who didn't feel like playing a witch, something she regrets to this day. Thank God. Fucking Christ,
I know,
Rosie
dude.
O'Donnell turned this down. She I would have fucking sucked, killed myself. Oh my God.
She would have just like been Rosie O'Donnell in every fucking scene. That would have sucked. That would have sucked.
Jennifer Lopez actually auditioned for the part of Sarah Sanderson before the producers ultimately decided to go with Sarah Jessica Parker.
Again, no. Yeah. Imagine Bette Midler, Rosie O'Donnell, and Jennifer Lopez in this fucking movie. It would not be.
Yeah. I just imagine that, and then also my mind, just because of Jennifer Lopez, just went to like, I don't remember this scene in Hustlers.
Yeah.
They also managed to get Thora Birch, who auditioned against a lot of other young actresses at the time, but stood out thanks to her maturity for her age, something the producers took note of.
Yeah, I remember in the interview, actually, all the producers were just like, oh, she was heads and shoulders above all the other kids. Because, like, she was Hollywood. She had done stuff before.
Yeah, well, also, she just, I mean, she had that air about her, even in the movie. Yeah. It was just like, she's good. Dude. Like, she is good.
She, like, punks Max around.
Yeah.
And even when he fucks up, like, that was a very good scene when she's, like, sad and sitting, you know, in the hay, whatever, it's all to Halloween, and Max is trying to make it up to her. And I'm like, man, this is, like, this is a very good, well-acted scene, and Thora Birch is what's carrying the fucking scene.
Yeah, well, and I mean, she does that for a lot of scenes between her and Max, because, I don't know, I just, like, a lot of their scenes together, they're very, like, authentically sibling.
Authentic, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
But anyway, so Disney enlisted former choreographer Kenny Ortega to direct the film. This would be his second time working with a Disney, or with a Disney.
With the Disney.
With the Disney. With Disney after his first film, Newsies, bombed in the box office, only to gain a cult following.
Seems like he has a trend here. Okay.
Luckily, Ortega still had an amazing reputation thanks to his work as a choreographer, having done the choreography for the film Dirty Dancing and the music video for Madonna's Material Girl. He also developed the dance for the song Mr. Roboto by Styx.
Okay, so we can blame the robot on this motherfucker. Hocus Pocus and the Robot. All right, cool.
I mean, and also Dirty Dancing.
And Dirty Dancing, that's right. Footloose. Ah, fucking A.
So there's a lot to take in there.
Of course he did High School Musical. Of course he did.
I'm so glad that I did not make up the fact that Kenny Ortega was a choreographer. I knew that in the back of my head.
You did?
Yes, I knew that. And I just remember, like, thinking that, and I'm like, I'm not going to bring it up on the podcast, because I'm like, I think I could be totally making this up and confusing him with someone else, but now that I'm reading it, I'm like, ah, I'm not making it up, I'm not crazy.
But not only was he a choreographer, he was the choreographer. Dude, he did Madonna's biggest fucking video, and Dirty Dancing, which was a huge, huge hit.
Dirty Dancing is one of my favorite movies of all time, fun fact.
Next to Hocus Pocus 2, Ortega's your boy. I can see why. I'm a carpenter, but Ortega thrown in there.
No, I mean, he did the choreography. It's not like he directed Dirty Dancing.
True, but you know how much dancing's in that goddamn movie? Huh?
A lot of it.
Yes.
It's in the title.
Director just pointed the camera, man. Ortega was like, I'm gonna make these moves.
Good lord. Anyway, when it came to scoring the film, the movie secured even more major talent, with future Oscar winner John Debney as the film's composer.
I forget what stuff he won for, but yeah, he is kind of a big deal.
The song Come Little Children was co-written by James Horner, who had been nominated for an Academy Award twice before his work on Hocus Pocus and many times after. And also, can I just say, Come Little Children was a bop in its own right.
Dude, I love that song. Like I love it. Hearing it again.
I know.
Dude.
I'm just like, ah!
But
yeah.
Like, it's very well sung. The orchestral aspects are just like, I don't know what it is, but, like, I want to fucking follow Sarah Jessica Parker on a fucking broom or mop, whatever it was.
Boobs.
Boobs, that too. Okay, yeah, that too.
That's why.
I think young me also appreciated that too as well. But, like, but the song itself was just, dude, like, just a little, her humming at the end, like, it was good.
Definitely. No, I just love Sarah Jessica Parker's, like, character.
Oh, she's amazing.
Like, she's so dumb she's and, like, so good. Adorable. And, like, I loved her character.
Amok, amok, amok.
Amok, amok, amok. I love her. Anyway, with so much talent, Disney was sure they were going to have a hit on their hands. But first, they needed to film the damn thing.
Obviously, which, of course, I come in here to let you know what happened while this thing was being filmed, which I think is not necessarily that bad. Compared to other stuff, but there are some interesting facts around it. So, the production began on October 12th of 1992, and the film was set in Salem, Massachusetts, though it would be mostly shot in Burbank, California.
How they turned Burbank into Salem, Massachusetts, I would love to know.
I will tell you. They did, however, manage to shoot for 2 weeks out in Salem and Marblehead, Massachusetts, though only for the very few daytime scenes in the film.
Those bitches.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew there was no way to, like, duplicate that.
Yeah, they scattered the Salem scenes throughout the film to give that Salem vibe to it. So, but most of the stuff was sets in Burbank. So, yeah, the Disney lot. One of the Salem locations, actually, was the home of love interest Allison, played by Vanessa Shaw, who later on would star in The Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, really? Remake.
Yeah, as an adult, obviously. But
well,
yeah.
I mean, she looks like pretty much like an adult in the.
She does look older, huh?
She looks older.
She looks older.
Like, I'm like, oh yeah, you're like a senior in high school.
Yeah.
Like...
Max looks 16.
Yeah, like, she looks older. And yeah. I, and so, but, I mean, Yeah. Whatever.
But the home in the film, Allison's home actually, is actually the Ropes Mansion, which eventually became a museum and is considered one of the most haunted places in Salem. The mansion is apparently haunted by original owner Nathaniel Ropes and his wife Abigail, who had died in the house. Nathaniel, due to the smallpox, and Abigail from burning to death when one of her robes caught on fire.
Jesus!
Yeah. So Nathaniel happened to be a key figure in the Salem witch trials, and Abigail was apparently a giant bitch to her servants. So when she screamed on account of being on fire, everyone thought she was just yelling at the help again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Imagine confusing, like, an I'm on fire scream with a I just hate, like, brown people.
Yeah. No, right? Like, you call these fucking grits? God.
Versus I'm on fire.
I'm on fire. God.
God.
Oh, I know. Yeah, she was a total bitch, man. Everybody. Wow. So she haunts that Ropes mansion along with Mr. Smallpox, fucking sending these people to death over there.
Salem's also one of those like deeply, deeply, deeply haunted places. So.
True, very true. Early America, right over there. So yeah,
DJ and I want to go real bad.
Dude, I want to go so bad too. Like just that. Salem in the fall? Like, it seems like it would be awesome.
Yeah, but also everyone and their mom wants to go to Salem in the fall, so...
True, it's gonna be packed.
And expensive.
And expensive, yeah.
But I wanna go!
I know. Me too. One day.
Our Horrible People's Podcast.
Salem run?
Salem trip. We'll do it.
This is when we do the Patreon thing. Alright, so let us go to Salem, please. So when it came to shooting in California, the crew shot in the same lot where the Tim Allen sitcom Home Improvement was filming. Yep. The cast and crew from each production would hang out while Hocus Pocus was filming. And they loved it. They were like fucking like this. I'm doing
really?
The hand thing. Yeah. Yeah, the Hocus Pocus crew and the Home Improvement crew, like they would just I was reading stories and like fucking they would like Doug Jones would just be shooting the shit and like all the kids would be like, hey, fucking like it was like a whole party. It was awesome.
That is really funny.
Did you ever watch Home Improvement?
I did.
Yeah.
Like, same. Not, like, religiously, but, like, if it was on, like, before George Lopez or something.
Oh,
like.
My God. That's so interesting, because I did not, you know, get into George Lopez. It was right after my stopping of watching sitcoms. But Home Improvement, I watched a lot.
Really?
Yeah, well, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, and, like, it was sixth grade. We were all the same age, and, like, yeah, you know?
Gotcha,
like,
gotcha.
It, you know, 90s kid. But, yeah, when it came to on-set annoyances, it was mostly from the many cats that play Binks.
Oh.
You know, this is a reiteration of Pet Sematary, but each cat had an action that they specialized in. And with so many cats, new cats, the cast was actually reportedly tired of re-earning their trust. The scenes where Binks was speaking were done by means of animatronics.
You can tell.
Yeah, definitely.
But again, it was like the 90s, so yeah. I can't blame them for that. I mean, it looks like Salem from...
Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah. Like, it's the same kind of look.
Yeah, well, they had... Okay, so what it was is they actually had, like, up to 12 cats. I don't think
Jeez.
I put that in there. Yeah, so they had to keep...
12?
They had different, like, very specific actions. So some of the cats, I think, were a little more still, because I was watching the special features, and yeah, they would have a cat that can jump, and they'd CG Binks's face on it when they needed an action with instead of doing the animatronics.
Mm.
So it was a really big fucking process.
Yeah.
But 12 cats, and each time, it was like a new cat every time they did it, so they'd have to like, okay, little buddy, like, I'm your friend, don't fucking scratch me. So yeah, I think Thora Birch hated them the most.
Really?
She fucking hated them. As for the special effects, the one the team had to nail the most was the broom flying. So yeah. Choreographer Peggy Holmes would make the trio of actors practice their broom flying constantly, and even sat with them as they drove around town in order to model their flying style after the way they drove. Apparently, Sarah Jessica Parker was very front forward, and Najimy was very 10-2. Yeah, so she incorporated, I think, Kathy Najimy was, like, talking, like, okay, yeah, and then she was like, that's you, that's how you're gonna fly your broom, and she's like, what? All trying to pay attention and shit. But Sarah Jessica Parker apparently loved riding the fucking broom, and would bring a New York Times paper with her to read between takes. So yeah, while the other actresses would spend their breaks on the ground and be lowered, Sarah Jessica Parker wanted to be suspended above the set, and would just chill on the broom and read.
I love that.
Dude, dude, right? And like her, okay, so her broom flying of the trio is the best.
Yeah, definitely.
Like she is like fucking just putting her hands all over this goddamn broom.
Yeah.
Like you can tell she's a natural at that shit.
Well, you can tell that she actually enjoys it and she's like practiced it significantly.
She's like sets up the fucking arrangement in her fucking home. Apparently, Sarah Jessica Parker also actually ate the spider at the beginning of the film. And in other bug-related effects, the moss that sprouted from undead Billy Butcherson's mouth were actually real-life moths, according to actor Doug Jones.
Good lord.
Yeah.
Also, learning that Doug Jones was in this movie, like, mm-hmm. I mean, I knew that, like, a couple of years ago, because I'm, like, obsessed with it. I would went on, like, a little Doug Jones, like, YouTube rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But, I was just like, oh, that's so cool. Cause right? I don't know. That's, I just thought, because that was also, like, one of, like, not, like, his first big, big movie, but, like, it was one of them.
Yeah, it's one of them that made him kind of iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially, Notre has one of those people that can put on a costume and act like a motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah, he did great. Like, I was really looking forward to, like, knowing that it was Doug Jones to, like, mm-hmm. watch this movie now and just, like, see how he, like, acted. And, like, he did great.
He did. Actually, okay, there's actually a little more to that. So, Jones actually also improvised all of his dialogue. All of it. And a major one being the big insult to Winifred. In the original script, he simply was supposed to call her a bitch right after spitting out the moths. She would have just spit it out and be like, bitch. But Jones didn't feel comfortable with this and asked Ortega if he could try something. So he ended up with Wench Trollop, you buck-tooth mop-riding firefly from hell, which is kept in the final film.
Yeah.
Much better.
So good.
Much better, although I want to see the bitch take, for sure.
Yeah.
But Bette Midler improvised some of her insults as well. She had a bit more help, though, as she would have her assistants follow her around with dictionaries and read off old-timey insults to her. That's a fucking Bette Midler-ism.
That's a move.
That's a Bette Midler move right there.
I mean, it's also a bit of a power move, but, like, if I was Bette Midler, like, I'd do that, too.
Like, with a team of assistants, as she's going to the craft services table to get, like, a bagel or something, and I'm just like, Trollop!
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Since most of the budget went to the Sanderson sisters and their special effects, costumes were a mix of old Disney outfits and homemade costumes. So, yeah, they still had to be a little cheap on this. But, I mean, overall, filming went fairly smooth and wrapped on February 10th, 1993 and set for a summer release? Summer? Anyways, yeah, let's get into that one.
Yeah. Alex? Halloween in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Before being released in theaters, Hocus Pocus would have to cut quite a few scenes before amounting to a 96-minute running time. The cuts were mostly due to the focus of the film shifting from the witches to the children, as Disney wanted the film to be more family-friendly and that the witches had too much screen time compared to the protagonists.
Yeah, actually, I think Kathy and Jimmy really didn't like that. Because she was in a lot more of the film.
Oh.
Yeah, and they're just like, nope, let's give it to fucking Max and Danny and Allison.
Yeah. One such scene was actually a zombie dance from Billy Butcherson. Doug Jones had actually danced in order to get the part, so it was a natural fit for the actor to do a dance scene in costume, though the scene was ultimately cut.
I would love to see that.
I would love to see that, too.
Yeah, he had a full dance scene. choreographed by fucking Kenny Ortega. Dirty Dancing himself.
I just imagine Dirty Dancing.
I know. Too, with like one other zombie costume girl doing something.
I really just imagined like them doing the end scene from Dirty Dancing.
Which was the end scene, I don't
know. Like, that I've had the time of my life.
Oh.
Like,
oh, sorry. I shouldn't clap into the mic, but that would have been good. That would have been awesome.
It would have been very funny. Another scene is an extended version of the high school showdown where the Sanderson sisters discover the school pool. This can also be seen in an early trailer. I maybe remember this. Yeah. I could be making that up.
I think I remember the trailer because they would promote this. Again, I was younger, so
yeah.
I saw the trailers and shit.
Another scene is the Sanderson sisters going on a shopping trip where Mary sees a baby and wants to eat it. This scene is actually part of a bigger subplot that would be completely cut in the film.
Oh, yeah. It's a big one, actually.
Well, because she also mentions wanting to eat children throughout the movie.
Pretty consistently,
so
yeah.
It's a consistent theme.
Yeah.
Originally, the witches would be able to lure children by giving them candy and later singing their song, causing the children to come to them in a trance-like state. When they return, they make a run at the grocery store and feed the cursed candy to the town's children, who bombarded the witches when they start giving out free candy. Mm-hmm. Of course, because, you know, it's Halloween. Yeah,
kids.
And children. Mm-hmm. This is why, in the climax of the film, both Max and Allison aren't affected by the song, since they didn't have any candy throughout the film.
Yep, so that's actually a pretty big plot point.
Because that was something that I thought of, too, as I'm just like, is it because they're too old?
I thought that it was because they're too old for years, until reading this bit.
Yeah.
But even some of the production, like the artwork too, the very beginning with mm-hmm. Thackeray Binks' sister, she has a witch's candy underneath her pillow. So that's how they lured her. So yeah, it was a genuine subplot that they're just like, donezos. It's because they're old, whatever, like unimportant.
Dang it.
I know.
That would have been, I think that would have been cool to have been explored just a teensy bit more.
A little bit more, yeah, a little bit more.
Special thanks to Patty Cake Productions for doing a recreation of the scene with the shooting script, which you can also find on YouTube.
And yeah, I just saw this. They did a fucking amazing job. Mm-hmm. Like, they literally reshot the scene. They had whatever actresses looked very close, but the voices were spot on.
Really?
And they did, like, because they had the shooting script, and they knew what camera angle to do, so, like, they literally, like, it looked like watching a deleted scene.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it was very long. It was, like, a four-minute scene. So, yeah, if you guys want to catch it, Patty Cake Production did a version of this, so you can see what was cut. I mean, it's just one part of a bigger plot, obviously, but it seems like an important scene.
It answers some questions.
Yeah, no, it actually seems like a really important scene.
But also, on top of that, there are a couple other cut sequences in the film involving the Sanderson sisters, but no one has seen them, and there's no indication as to what they actually are.
Because Disney. They got a lock on this shit.
Yeah, they have to keep everything under lock and key.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to releasing Hocus Pocus, finally, in the middle of the summer, Hocus Pocus garnered mixed to negative reviews, unfortunately. Yes. So let's get into it. Janet Maslin of the New York Times wrote that the film, quote, has flashes of visual stylishness, but virtually no grip on its story. Fuck you, Janet Maslin.
Maslin piece of shit.
Ty Burr of Entertainment Weekly said adults will find it only mildly insulting, and our boy Roger Ebert gave it one star.
Oh, no.
Saying, quote, Hocus Pocus is a film desperately in need of self-discipline, and, quote, but watching the movie is like attending a party you weren't invited to and where you don't know anybody and they're all in on a joke but won't explain it to you. Unquote.
Ugh, he's too old for this movie, man.
It's so good.
I know, but you know what? A lot of, yeah, Mixed and Negative was true because I was reading the reviews and a lot of critics were down. Jeez. They're like, it's a fucking kids Disney movie, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, this was, you're not the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Go ask some fucking children what they thought.
Yeah.
God.
But you know what they would think, these children? They would, that some of these children want to fuck Thackeray Binks. How about that?
Okay. Thank you.
Ooh. All right, let's get back into it.
The film released on July 16th, 1993, over 3 months before Halloween. It opened up in fourth place, right under Jurassic Park, in its sixth week, and just narrowly beating Free Willy.
Not the best showing. No. Not the best showing.
It would be out of the top 10 by its second week, and only make $39.5 million off of its $29 million budget. Free Willy would end up making over $150 million, and Jurassic Park over $1 billion.
Had some tough competition, but I will take this over Free Willy any fucking day of the week.
I don't like Free Willy.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since I was like a child.
I've seen it once, and I was just like, okay, like, I this was me as, like, the aspiring marine biologist as a child. I should have been like, oh, but, like, no, I didn't like it. I was like, this is not a good movie.
I think I liked it as a kid.
Yeah.
I liked the sequel, and then, like, you go up a year, and you're like, oh, that's all stupid now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hocus Pocus did not fall for that. That stayed good. It really just died.
Yeah. the film wasn't a full-on flop, but it certainly wasn't as profitable as Kirschner had promised. Disney still had A Nightmare Before Christmas in production, which was actually set to release in October, but Hocus Pocus would be seen as a somewhat of a disappointment, and was thus relegated to TV movie status to be played mostly for 1 month of the year. This, however, would eventually work in its favor.
Yep. And that's, they turned it back into a Disney Channel film, basically.
Yeah.
Which is what we were talking about earlier. We both know it as that.
Yeah, definitely. But, well, again, it came out in 1993, so it came out before I was born, so...
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then it came out when I was, like, had memories. Just the earliest memories, though. So, yeah, I don't remember if I ever actually saw it in theaters or not, but I do remember seeing it on TV. Anyways, but since Hocus Pocus was mostly seen during the Halloween season, it began to develop a huge, huge following and was absolutely killing it on home video. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
Like, people were renting this bitch a lot when it came time for Halloween. It was picked up by ABC Family to be played every year and was consistently one of the most viewed programs in the month of October. Like, most. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I used to fucking love ABC Family, man.
ABC Family and the 31 Days of Halloween?
Yes, it was the shit.
Always.
Anyway, and I did like the Harry Potter marathons, too. I would watch the shit out of those. Harry Potter weekend was my shit. Anyways, the film's cult status increased tourism in Salem and continues to do so every year, but was particularly big during the film's 25th anniversary, which saw a huge influx of tourists. The Haunted Happenings Grand Parade even did a Hocus Pocus theme to commemorate the film's big anniversary.
That makes me so happy.
Right? I mean, it's a pretty integral part of Salem now, because this movie, like, I mean, Salem's always been on the map because of history, but this put a positive version of Salem on the map.
This put, like, a pop culture kind of, like, modern day, like, Hocus Pocus kind of.
And it literally makes me want to go to Salem. It literally makes me want to go to Salem. Though, Omri Katz would retire from acting, actually.
I was wondering why. I was just like, I haven't seen him in anything, and I wasn't sure if there's a reason for that.
It's one of those, if you look at his IMDb, like, the quality of the films definitely dwindled until he was like, yeah, cool, I'm doing this shit now. Like, that's basically what happened. But the rest of the cast and crew saw major successes. Sarah Jessica Parker would make Sex in the City. Thora Birch would gain huge recognition for her role as Jane in American Beauty, which is, I like that film. I haven't seen it in a long time, though, so I don't know how it holds up, but
well,
I mean,
given, like, context.
Oh, shit, you're good. That's a good point. Oh, shit, Spacey's in that one.
Yeah!
Fuck!
Given context, I don't know if it holds up. I've actually never seen American Beauty, so.
No, but it's, like, it definitely pushes the line.
No, I know. Like, I know what it's about, and I've seen, like, enough about it. Like, I'm just like,
Oh, no, I used to love that. Oh, fuck, that sucks. Oh, good, I had a revelation about the darkness behind American Beauty, even worse now. But Thora Birch got some good recognition from that. That's nice.
Right?
Yeah. Kathy Najimy would voice Peggy Hill on King of the Hill.
Yay.
Yeah, fucking, oh my god. A character I don't like, but she does an amazing job as Peggy Hill.
Okay, so I don't know if I actually told you this. King of the Hill is probably the one, like, adult animation TV show that I can stand.
Yeah, you've told me that before.
Yeah.
Actually. Yes, and Kathy Najimy is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little did I know.
Right? Vanessa Shaw would appear in Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut and a remake of The Hills Have Eyes, which we totally are going to cover one day.
I was debating putting Eyes Wide Shut in our December
listing. Oh, really?
Because it's a Christmas movie.
It's not really horror-y, though.
It's pretty freaky.
It's pretty freaky, that's true. It's freaky in a lot of ways, actually.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was debating putting it, because it's also Stanley Kubrick's last movie. So.
It's true. That would be an interesting one. I feel like we're going to cover a little more Kubrick before we get to Eyes Wide Shut. Maybe next year. We'll see.
Which is why it's not on the list
not
for
on
December.
The list. So Kenny Ortega, as you guys know, would go on to direct High School Musical and continue his reign as one of Disney's most reliable in-house directors.
Yay!
He also did The Descendants, which I guess is very big.
That's
a big one, right?
Yeah, there's like three of them.
Yeah, yeah, he did all of those. He actually brought Kathy Najimy back to play one of the witches. Not the witch from Hocus Pocus, but an own original witch for that movie.
Cool.
Yeah. Hocus Pocus is currently a staple of Freeform's 13 Nights of Halloween, and the earliest airings of the movie get over 8 million viewers, which is more than a lot of cable programming. Like, cable does not get 8 million viewers for anything. So yeah, every October, it makes millions in sales on home video, making up $21 million in 2008 alone. And that was 11 years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't profitable right off the bat, but like, every year, it's making up to its box office again and again and again.
One of my fondest memories was in like sixth grade. I was at one of my best friends at the time. I was at her house,
mm-hmm.
and we made those... I have some in my fridge right now, but those, like, the Pillsbury, like, ghost,
oh, yeah.
like, the pumpkin and ghost, like, sugar cookies, mm-hmm. the ones that have, like,
that you sprinkle up and shit?
No, you don't put sprinkles on them.
Oh, they already have the dye on them.
The decorations on them already. And you just stick them in the oven, and they're, like, this big, and, like, you can eat, like, 27 of them, and then feel like you're gonna die.
This big, so our podcast listeners know, is, like, an okay sign with your hand.
But they're not that huge, but they know what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I got you.
And they are a Halloween staple. Everyone's mm-hmm. excited about them right now. Point is one of my fondest memories is watching Hocus Pocus and eating those at my friend's house.
Aww.
And, like, I was just, that's just a very fond memory of me. And
that's a Halloween experience. That's a pure Halloween experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right there.
So
gosh.
And we watched Hocus Pocus at, I think, Twitches, which is a Disney Channel.
That's another,
yeah.
That one's past my generation, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But man, oh, I want sugar cookies and Hocus Pocus now. I'm going to rewatch this shit. I'm totally going to.
Yeah.
I got the Blu-ray, so, you know.
Yeah, and then I have sugar cookies.
All right. Plans. Anyways, so sometime in 2014, Kirschner had approached Disney on a sequel, for which the cast had been teasing maybe a possibility, but was ultimately turned down. The sequel was again teased for years, until 2017, when it was confirmed that the next Hocus Pocus film would be a remake to air on Freeform.
No!
Fucking assholes. Kenny Ortega and Bette Midler have no involvement with the project, with Midler, in particular, being against the idea completely. Now, context here. Midler was all about doing a sequel. Like, she would tease it on Twitter. Like, it was a big deal. And then Sarah Jessica Parker and Kathy and Jimmy both also wanted to be a part of it. But Disney ultimately did not like Kirschner's idea. So he didn't hear back from them, unfortunately. So that's why we don't get a sequel to Hocus Pocus.
But even then, I'd rather not have a sequel, and I'd rather not have a remake. Like, I would rather just have it
as it is, yeah. I mean, but if you're getting the three original witches, if they're going to do it, I would say at least you had the backing before.
Okay.
Yeah, but since it failed, done.
If they're going to do it at all, I'd rather they do it with obviously, the three original witches. Like, that mm-hmm. would be great.
Yeah.
However, since mm-hmm. they're not. Yeah. I just...
You're okay with
leave
it.
Leave me with what yeah, I have.
That's true.
Please.
It is legend. Yes, let it be. The film would eventually get a sequel in some form, though, by the way of a 2018 book titled Hocus Pocus and the All-New Sequel. It follows the daughter of Max and Allison, who is named Poppy. In it, Poppy is skeptical of her parents' story about the Sanderson sisters and makes her way to the Sanderson house to prove there's nothing to be afraid of. Obviously, madness ensues. So, I didn't read it, but, like, yeah, that there's an unofficial or official-ish sequel to it out there somewhere. Though originally a bit of a flop, Hocus Pocus is now synonymous with Halloween. And again, it's all thanks to a small bedtime story from a talented producer and a cat named Inx.
Yay!
And that, guys, is the production of Hocus Pocus. We did it!
We made it!
So, Alex, with that, I know we've been gushing about this for, like, several minutes now. Probably a lot.
An hour almost.
Oh my god, really? Anyways.
Normally it doesn't take us that long.
No, but I mean, there's a lot to take here, but what are your thoughts on the film?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so.
Go, gush away. Do it. Do it.
So, like I said, I had a couple of little asides, but this movie, like, not just for me, but even just, like, people in their 20s, in my age range, like, it's such a nostalgic movie. Like, mm-hmm. it's such a, I didn't realize it was so nostalgic until, like, I kind of more actively engaged on, like, the internet and everything, mm-hmm. like, as I got older. But so many of, like, my friends, like, fucking love Hocus Pocus. It's, like, a part of, like, our Halloween identity.
Yeah.
You know?
Halloween identity, I think, is a good way of putting that. Absolutely.
Like, it's, like, when I posted on Instagram that I was watching it, like, a bunch of people were like, oh my gosh, you're watching Hocus Pocus. Like, how cool.
Like, bitch, it's Halloween.
Yeah. Like, you know, and I watched it, like, I mean, when we're recording this, it's, like, the beginning of October.
Yeah.
So, that was really cool. So
knock it out early.
yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing also is, like, people are putting together, like, lists of, like, where you can watch Hocus Pocus on mm-hmm. cable this October. Like, that kind of shit. Like, people are actively trying to find ways to watch it. And I think that's so, so cool because it's so, like, it's such a nostalgic film, but it's still so good. And it's still
good, yeah.
And it still has that, like, that, like, underhanded, like, Disney kind of adult humor that, like, mm-hmm. if you're under the age of 10, you probably wouldn't get. Like, there's so many virgin jokes.
There is. There's a lot.
So many virgin jokes.
Calling him an airheaded virgin.
Yeah. When I was younger, like, I mean, like, when I watched this movie, I was super, super young. So mm-hmm. I was just like, what's a virgin? Like,
yeah. What's a virgin? No, same here.
Like,
right?
I was just like, why is everyone teasing him? Like, I don't get it. What's a virgin?
You relate to the hair, you're like, I want to be a virgin like you are a virgin. Hopefully.
But no, it was just like that whole fucking thing. And so it was just really cool. It was like the whole, like, that was cool. And then watching it as an adult, you kind of get, because I haven't, like I mentioned, I hadn't watched Hocus Pocus in a really, really long time.
Same here, dude, like 3 or 4 years.
No, for me, I literally have not watched it probably since, like, middle school.
Oh my god, no, why, what?
I don't know, I just, I hadn't watched it. I was worried that how I had held it up in my mind mm-hmm. was not going to be the same.
Oh my god, and that definitely wasn't the case, no.
And that's why I had that moment where I'm like, holy shit, Thackeray Binks is McGee in NCIS, and I wanted to fuck both of them.
Yeah, so you're a little turned on going into it as an adult. I get it.
Well, and so that just, that was, it was very, very funny, because I didn't even realize it until I was watching it, and I was like, that's really funny. And then, I don't know, it was very, very fun, because, like, when I watched it, I was, I think, again, you're supposed to identify with people, or, like, the characters your age, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And so, it was supposed to identify, again, with Danny, because mm-hmm. I was, like, closer to her age, and also, but also, I was the oldest sibling, so yeah. I had younger siblings. So
you're
was,
a little Max in there?
Yeah.
So I was the oldest sibling, too, so yeah. Max and me were, like, yeah. So, and California, yeah. fucking, like, yeah.
And it was just, like, that kind of, like, you know, dumb, adventurous kind of shit, and mm-hmm. so it was interesting, because I didn't have a character that I necessarily really, really identified with in that movie. Mm-hmm. It was more, like, a combination of all of the three of them.
Yeah.
Because I had, like, that, like, innocence of Danny, but also, like, that, like, fuck you kind of, because I moved a lot yeah. as a kid, too.
Same
so,
here. That's
so,
true.
So, like, mm-hmm. that whole, like, where Max was just, like, angry about moving, like, oh, I'm like, gosh. I get that.
I didn't even think about that, because I moved every year until third grade.
Yeah.
And then it was, like, every 3 years. But, like, yeah, I got used to being the new kid on the block.
Yeah.
Like, a lot, actually.
Yeah, me too.
So, oof.
So, until I moved quite a bit until I was 11.
Damn, yeah.
And then I moved to San Diego, and mm-hmm. then I was, like, a lot more stable. But and I, even then, I still moved within San Diego.
Same thing with Riverside. Within Riverside.
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully, I didn't have to, like, switch a bunch of schools or anything. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, I was used to being new. So mm-hmm. that was, like, kind of something that I related to. But then also Allison's whole, like, you know, like, believing in,
yeah,
like, the supernatural.
The witchcraft thing, yeah.
Like, I was just like, fuck you, man. Like, you're not believing in this shit. So, that was cool. So, there was a lot, like, you could take a lot from all of the characters. And I think that was something that I really appreciated. Or didn't know that I appreciated, but
until
I appreciate now.
Yeah. No, I was actually telling Sydney that, like, even though I hadn't seen this movie probably in, like, maybe 3 to 4 years, maybe even 5, to be honest with you, because it was one of those I'd catch on cable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd watch it whenever it came on, but I'd still watch it every year. But it was with commercials, cut down, doing something else, you know? But I always liked it. But watching it again, it was like, oh, I know all these lines. I mean, I didn't know them until they said them. But after they said them, I'm like, I know the tone. I know the inflection. I know every little thing. Because I loved this movie. Mm-hmm. I, like, rented it all the fucking time. It was such a good one. And you're right. Each character has their own little thing to contribute there. I, of course, again, moving around a lot, being a little baby edgelord. Max was my shit back in the day. But I also, again, I loved the witches.
Yeah.
The witches were so, like, dude, Bette Midler, that could never be any other role. Like, that shit, like, I don't know what it was, but the story was fast-paced, and it did Halloween so well.
Yeah.
Like, the Halloween vibe that I, like, it feels like Halloween. It's
yeah.
not officially Halloween, I don't think, anymore until I watch this fucking movie. Like, it's just, it, like, there's a darkness to it.
Yeah.
That, like, they didn't, it seemed like that kind of darkness to it would be sterilized with further Disney movies down the line, especially stuff based in Halloween, be more commercial. But this one seemed very, very genuine, very filmy, very, very authentic, which
yeah.
I think I really appreciate with this film.
The mom is Madonna.
Yeah.
Also went totally over my head as a kid. Because mm-hmm. I didn't know who fucking Madonna was when I was
yeah.
like 7. Like, you know, like mm-hmm. it just wasn't my thing. And I was just like, because like, and so when Danny's like, what are you supposed to be? Oh, and the mom is just like, Madonna?
I was like, more boobies.
Yeah, that was the joke. Because she's just like, why are your tits out? Like, when Danny says, who are you supposed to be? Like, what she's really saying is, why are your tits out?
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. Dude, but like, I thought fucking Billy Butcherson was a little creepy too. When I was younger, I was like, that's a scary ghost or a scary zombie to be chasing him throughout the fucking film.
Yeah.
Gets decapitated. Binks dying several times.
Yeah.
When his body would like replump up.
Or like reflate.
Inflate, yeah. And like, but like each time I was like, oh, that's gruesome.
Yeah.
To show children.
It was very scary because like he got hit by a bus.
Yeah. Like, that the Sanderson sisters were on. Funny detail in the film. But yeah, like it's, I don't know, there's something about this film that I think it's one of the more, like, special. There's something special about it. Like, a lot of the elements shouldn't really work because it's kind of a goofy story. And it's very, like, very contained.
Technically a very simple story.
Simple, yeah.
But it's elaborated, and, like, I think the set design's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The acting is very, like, obviously very well done.
Yeah, well, the acting is played genuinely. They're not like, hey, look, we're fucking funny witches. It's just like, nope, this is the witch's personality.
Yeah, like, and they just happen to have, like, kind of dorky personality.
Yeah.
Like, unintentionally dorky.
Genuine.
It's malicious, but it comes off, like, dorky. Like,
but you don't hate them.
Yeah.
You don't fucking hate them. No.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of cool. So, yeah. I mean, do you have any... I mean, you kind of went into it, but, like, your other thoughts on the film?
Oh, I mean, honestly, like, this is just... It's one of the most pure kind of, like, films that we've done. Like, it has elements of darkness, but they're not like, oh, look how edgy we are.
Yeah.
It's like, no, the story demands this, so this is how this is going
to
be.
As opposed to, like, Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, which is, like, it has, like, horror elements to it. This definitely has that, like, comedic edge to it that makes it, you know, wholesome.
Yeah, makes it more wholesome for sure. And again, where Scooby-Doo was, like, a commentary on Scooby-Doo, and it had much more lofty ambitions.
Definitely.
This one is more like, no, this is a legend, a tale, something that we're going to tell, and we're going to contemporize a little bit for your audiences, and it's going to be fun. And it is fun, which is why I appreciate this film. But also, what did you think of the special effects?
Surprisingly held up.
Yeah, they do. I really think they do as well.
Surprisingly well for, let's see, 27 years?
27 years, yeah.
27?
Is it 27? 26?
26.
2019, yeah. Also, last year was the anniversary. 25th. Oh, interesting. Okay, that's probably why I got that fact. But yeah. But yeah, damn. For 26 years, this, because, I mean, you see a lot of movies from this era, and they have that, like, you know, when she does the lightning, it all looks fake or whatever it is. Like, anything that kind of looks fake still fits the tone of the film. Like, it still fits the tone. And I think the set design's good enough to where any special effects that might not work work within the context of the film.
Yeah.
But the broom flying, too, though. I think they did that amazingly.
The broom flying was good. The only thing that obviously was, like, kind of, like, campy, I guess, was the when they drink the potion, like Emily, and then later in the film Max.
Oh, with their bodies getting all translucent.
When they get all, like, translucent and ghostly, and I'm like, okay. Please stop.
Put your opacity filter a little higher, please.
Like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. Like, we can do better than that. But, I mean, I still understand why they did it, because they had to make it look, like, super obvious, like, someone is in danger.
Yeah. But to be honest, I think even back then, I was like, that's fake.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. When I did watch the movie, like, when I was younger, I was also just, I think even then, my little, like, cynical, like, 12 or 11-year-old ass was just like, okay.
Oh, yeah, suck their fucking souls, man. Whatever, dude. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Just turn to stone. Which, good effects, by the way, too, on the stone stuff. Yeah.
The, her turning to stone, because she lands in the grave, in the graveyard, I thought that was a really cool effect, too.
Yeah, same
that was
here.
Fun. That was, like, that transition was really cool. Like, I remember thinking that was really cool as a kid, thinking that was really cool as an adult as well.
Yeah. No, and apparently they built a bunch of those. Mm. Like, so they had to really refine which one was the most Bette Midler-y of the statues.
They did good,
yeah.
Again, I'm, like, fucking obsessed with the set design. Like, I'm gonna sing it praises for
keep
the rest
singing the
of
praises,
forever.
Honestly. Like,
I just, it feels so authentic.
Yeah. And I just. For Burbank.
It does.
For Burbank, California.
The inside of, like, the Sanderson sisters' house that, like, was turned into a museum, like, that, mm-hmm. I'm just like, I want to be in that. Like, I want to visit it. Like, that looks so cool.
Oh my God. I've been wanting to visit that shit since watching this goddamn movie.
Right. So it just, it looks like, even though it's all, like, covered in, like, cobwebs or whatever, like, it just looks so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Allison's house. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome. I'm
beautiful.
Like,
and I was just like, holy shit.
But like, this movie made me want to trick or treat.
Yeah.
Like, trick or treat like a motherfucker, dude.
Yeah. It brought me back to this like childhood nostalgia where I was mm-hmm. just like, ah, oh, fuck. What I wouldn't give to be like a child in Salem on Halloween and have that experience.
Oh my God. I know, right? And we miss, we're adults now, but like, we can't trick or treat in Salem.
No.
We just can't.
No.
Like, not with that childhood. Fucking jovial, fuck yeah.
I mean, we can go get shit faced.
We could do that. Fucking just start taking candy from kids, doing the same thing as the bullies, I mean, just waiting out in front of a house and be like, there's a tax.
I mean, we could just go buy our own candy and get shit faced in Salem.
Yeah, that could work too. Just start tossing it out.
I think the joy then comes when you're an adult to giving candy to children.
I fucking hate doing that though.
Really?
I don't like it.
I love it.
No, because I'm always doing, like, watching, like, Halloween, I'm watching movies or going out, but if I'm watching movies, I'm balls deep in these movies. So these kids just interrupting every time, I don't like it.
Oh. Well, I've never really had trick-or-treaters, because where I've lived in, like, the middle of fucking nowhere. So.
Oh, no. My neighborhoods have always been very trick-or-treat heavy.
Oh.
Like, big, big time. Even in the hood, to be honest with you. but, like, yeah. So, except this neighborhood, obviously, because I live in a fucking brewery. But, like, yeah. It's always been, like, a big deal, but I gradually, they started to become pests to me. So, but I am down to get shit-faced and, you know, throw candy out in Salem. That'd
well,
be fun.
I mean, this year Halloween is on a Thursday, so.
Okay, one year when it's on, like, a Friday or a Saturday. Let's go to Salem and get shit-faced. That'd be fun.
So next year or the year after.
All right, cool. Down. All right. Save for it. Save for it. But actually, another big question here is, what elements date this film? What makes it a 1993 film?
A lot of the the animatronics.
Animatronic work, yeah.
For Thackeray Beaks.
Mm-hmm. Not quite Jurassic Park levels yet.
No.
Even though it was released the same year, but not quite.
No. they didn't quite have the Jurassic Park budget.
Yeah, they didn't have Spielberg and fucking Amblin behind them either, no. So, yeah.
But that's fine. Mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, it definitely, like, a lot of it makes it feel like a 1993 movie, but, like, not in, like, a bad way.
Not in a bad way. No,
like,
definitely not.
I mean, obviously, a lot of, like, the fashion, I'm just like, ah,
oh,
yes.
Yes.
Ah, yes.
The good old Boy Meets World fashion, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, or, like, you know, a lot of, like, when they were in high school, like, I'm like, ah, yes, the 90s.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. No PowerPoints here. Uh-uh.
Yeah. So that was fun. Or, like, his new sneakers. Like, I'm just like, wow.
Dude, the bullies.
Yeah.
The bullies are 90s AF.
Yeah.
They are, like, with fucking ice on the back of his head. Like, that, like, wannabe
ice.
White boy hip-hop kind
yeah.
of thing. Like, that's 90s as shit, dude. Yeah. But still a little grungy. Still a little grungy with the long hair.
Touch of grunge.
Touch of grunge. Touch of wannabe hip-hop.
Yeah.
Touch of, yeah.
It was weird. Definitely weird. So that was fun.
Some of the effects, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, some of the effects, like, obviously had that, like, 90s edge to it, but that's, like, obviously, like, I can't expect 2019,
mm-hmm.
which is why I don't want a goddamn remake.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Tie-dye shirt.
The tie-dye shirt
does it.
Also, like, what do the parents do? That house was so fucking nice.
Seriously.
Like, Max had a fucking, like, staircase in his room.
In his room!
Like, do you know how jealous I was of that shit?
I was always.
I was jealous of that now. I was
oh
like,
God
damn.
Oh, man. I seriously.
And in a drum set? Like, I was like, wow.
And he's all like, this place sucks. I'm like, dude, your parents were obviously rich in L.A. and fucking kings in Salem, Massachusetts.
Right, like, if they could afford, like, they chose to move from Los Angeles
yeah.
to Salem.
With whatever job that salary transferred across the coast. Like, they were balling.
Like, that, I could move with what I'm making now to literally pretty much anywhere else in the United States.
That's
and
true.
And be a fucking queen among men.
Except New York.
Except New York City. I said
yeah.
pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I could buy a home.
True.
In pretty much anywhere else.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's probably what they did.
I'm like, barely making it work.
Yeah, I'm just like, credit card, you got it.
Here, I can sometimes buy wine.
Yeah. To watch Hocus Pocus. Yeah. It all comes together.
I was drinking wine while I was watching Hocus Pocus.
Oh my gosh.
I was drinking a lot of wine.
Oh, dude. I had a nice little whiskey in that tiki cup over there.
Was it good?
Yeah, whiskey and Hocus Pocus is the shit.
All right, noted.
But yeah, no, that, I mean, obviously, the amount of things that date this film are very minimal compared to other films of the era, I feel like.
Yeah, and even then, like, and I think that was super, super smart on their part,
mm-hmm.
because it allowed you to, like, acknowledge that there was, like, certain dated elements, but it didn't, like, suck you into, like, a certain time period.
No.
Because, like, I could still watch it and be like, okay, yes, this is the 90s, but... It wasn't, like, beating me over the head with, like, this is the 90s.
Nothing like that.
Or, like,
no.
They didn't have, like brick phones. Or they didn't have, like, floppy disks.
No.
They didn't have any of that shit that, like, any technology that, like, really made you feel like it was the 90s.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool.
It was written in the 80s, so maybe that's what it was. Like, I don't know where it is, but, like, yeah, there's the most minimal amount of 90s stuff to keep this film feeling almost timeless.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, like, it can hold up.
The only thing, and they couldn't have helped this, was the fashion.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't help that, because it's not,
and
like, you
can...
And
that could come back in, like, two decades anyways.
90s fashion is pretty popular now anyway.
That's true.
Like,
Five more years.
We just had a 90s, like, renaissance... Like 90s fashion renaissance anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Again, it's cyclical. So, you know, the film might be relevant more again. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, the only thing that's different would be, like, the special effects and, like, the animatronics. Like,
yeah.
That's the only thing that, like, really I was just like, if this was done now, it would have been done differently.
But I also feel like it has a bit of a charm to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the special effects add a bit of that, like... It puts you a little out of the movie, but, like, in an appreciative kind of tone. You're like, oh, okay.
In, like, a wholesome kind of way.
In a wholesome kind of way, exactly.
This movie, like, the word to describe this movie is wholesome.
Mm-hmm. Wholesome. Precise. I agree. Wholesome and awesome.
I agree. Okay, so going on from that, what does this film have to say about sibling relationships, considering how the sisters interact with each other versus Max and Danny?
Oh, dude. I think this film, like, nails it.
Yeah.
It fucking nails it. Like, the Sanderson sisters feel like sisters. They all are obviously completely different, but at the end of the day, they're sisters. They
right.
get mad at each other, but they're sisters. Fucking Billy the Butcherson tried to fuck Sarah, and, like, Bette Midler did her thingy, Winifred did her thingy, and then, but, you know, she's still close to Sarah.
Yeah.
So it's like, no matter what happens, like,
yeah.
they stuck with each other all through the years, try to help each other, they talk shit, they do whatever they want, but at the end of the day, they're motherfucking sisters.
That's a really nice, elaborate way to say bros before hoes.
Bros before hoes, precisely. and then also Max and Danny have just touching scenes. Like, literally, he pisses her off, and he, like, I mean, honestly, with my own siblings, too, like, I remember my little brother telling me, like, oh, yeah, like, later on, as adulthood, like, one day, you know, you just wanted to go off with your friends, and he told me to go somewhere else, and he's like, that, like, hurt me, and I'm like, oh, like, I didn't know back then, I was just being a stupid asshole, but, like, it's just one of those things where, like, you have that instinct to, like, make it up and be like, I'm sorry, and, like, do whatever it is like that.
Yeah.
And, like, that's a sibling thing. You don't want to see them hurt or in trouble. It is, even though you can hate them sometimes.
Yeah.
And Max and Danny fit that bill really, really well.
I think Max and Danny have the same age difference that me and my younger brother have.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting to see that dynamic.
Yeah.
So I think that was really cool, like, just to see, just because, like, I also was very, very similar like that with my
yeah.
with my younger brother.
Same. I did my own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I mean, I wasn't, like, well, I doted on my brother a lot. Like, I was just very, like, I'll take you trick-or-treating, like, you
mm-hmm.
know? But I also, like, there were moments, like, whenever I wanted, like, he would come bug me when, like, my friends were over, and
mm-hmm.
I was just,
yeah.
like, get lost.
Yeah, that shit you don't realize affects them, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's you're a dumb kid. You don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
You're still, like, you know, 16.
You're still developing. Yeah, yeah.
Your brain is not all there.
And it's a little selfish because you're fucking 16. Yeah. Yeah.
But then, like, with the Sanderson sisters, I think what was really cool about that is that my mom... And my aunts, like, they're three sisters also.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a fun little, like, parallel. They don't, like, obviously talk to each other like that, but it was just a fun little, like, they're a group of sisters.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like, women on my mom's side of the family, and there's a lot of, like, groups of sisters. So it was just very fun. That's a fun little, like, connection.
Dude, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
My mom is one of four sisters.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that she was raised with. She actually has, like, 17 siblings. But, like, but the ones she was raised with, yeah, mm-hmm. four other sisters. And they kind of had that vibe, too. You're right.
Yeah. Well, like, and also, it's just so funny because, like, you, growing up as an adult, like, I'm mm-hmm. just like, oh, wow. Like, as a kid, I thought they all got along all the time, perfectly. Everything was great, always. Like, they never mm-hmm. fought. And now, as an adult, I'm like, oh, wow, you guys disagree on shit all the fucking time.
Yeah. But they're still family at yeah. the end of the day, you know? Which I think is what they nail with the Sanderson sisters. Because they got bicker. An objective. They bicker. Perfect word. Yes, they totally fucking bicker, which yeah. is cool.
And I think that's fun. And yeah. also, you know, like, the whole sibling interactions, I think it's important because you, a lot of, you know, these movies usually have, especially Disney movies, have, like, a strong, like, romantic, like, mm-hmm. sucker punch. Like, they always push the romantic agenda with it, which I think was, it wasn't as prevalent.
No, I mean, even the stuff with Max and Allison, like, they were just attracted to each other.
Yeah, like, then... it was cute, but, like, it wasn't, like, a... We're together.
Yeah. like Max got stupid. Allison wanted to help because she knows the significance of what's going on.
Yeah.
They get it done. And then, you know, they cut. Oh, my God. Max and Allison's little cuddle. I was like, young me was like, oh, I want to do that.
Yeah, the cuddle was really cute.
It's like so nice. Wholesome. It was so wholesome, even though I think, you know, the vibe I was getting as adult was she was like, oh, you ain't gonna be a virgin no more. No! Not yet, but that trial is ending. But, I mean, when it comes back to the sibling stuff, though, I think this is a family movie.
Yeah.
Like, the way the parents interact with the kids, too, when Max goes during the party, she's like, I need to tell you something, you know, whatever. And then the dad stops his little goofiness, is like, where's Danny? Is everything okay? But it felt so right.
Yeah.
Like, there was no, like...
It was genuine.
It was so, yeah, so genuine, so heartful. And then they were really trying to problem solve because they are a family. It is to the core, a family film. But I think the emphasis on siblings really makes it stand out from other stuff.
Definitely. Yeah. I agree. So why do you think the film was able to pick up steam over the years after being pretty much a flop originally?
The Disney Channel.
Fucking Disney Channel.
The Disney Channel, and honestly, this is about as pure Halloween as you can get. Like, pure Halloween.
Yeah.
Like, it is a Halloween movie. And it's very well-paced, very short.
Yeah.
Can be played on TV, can be played on DVD.
I did have to watch it over the course of 2 days.
See? Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, you can take a break and come back.
Yeah,
it'll be totally fine.
I had to take a break because I started getting really bad secondhand embarrassment.
Oh, from what?
When Max got up on the stage and was just like, the Sanderson sisters are here, and like everyone was laughing at him. I'm like, I am too drunk for this. I need to go to bed.
Oh, dude.
It was also getting kind of late and I was getting tired and I was just like, okay, I'll finish the rest tomorrow, but this is embarrassing. I need to go.
Oh, no. I love it because then you pop it in and you're right into the musical number.
Yeah.
Which is so energetic.
I fucking love the musical number, but I had to just go to the beginning of the musical number because I was like, I can't handle this. I can't handle it.
I love that. And that, like, the guy being like, hey, good joke, buddy. Happy Halloween. Just fucking pushes them off. I'm just like, what a dick.
I love that I can watch absolutely blood-soaked, terror-filled movies, but mm-hmm. the second anyone is mildly embarrassed in front of other people, I'm like, I can't do it.
You're like, okay, let me look away right now.
Let me just skip ahead. Like, I had to do that for something else that I was watching. Like, I was on Netflix or something. I forget mm-hmm. what I was watching, but I was just like, I am skipping ahead until this embarrassing moment is over.
Oh, that's hilarious. No, I don't know. This one, I mean, luckily that's one of the few. No, Max gets embarrassed a lot throughout the film. He's kind of punked around.
Right. Little moments like that is fine. Mm-hmm. Like, when Danny is, like, teasing him after she's, like, hiding in his closet and he's, like, fake making out with his pillow, which was funny as shit,
oh my god. Dude, and she's all like talking shit for him, like, I have a brother, he's gonna beat you up, and I'm like, oh, Max already got punked by these motherfuckers. It's like, no.
That whole scene too, I was just like,
how are you gonna get out of this one, asshole? Like, oh my gosh. Yeah, no. I gotta say though, that, like, even before watching this film again, I kept replaying that musical number from Bette Midler, like, in my head, leading up to it.
I can envision it.
Like,
it was that.
It's vivid.
Yeah, that scene, and when they're at Satan's house.
Oh, yeah. That's comedy gold. That's fucking comedy fucking gold, dude. Funny. They're like, master!
And he's just like, hello!
Yeah.
Also, why did they have New Jersey accents?
It's just Gary Marshall, director, and his sister, actually, like, playing the part. So they got Gary Marshall.
Okay. I was just like, what's with the accents? You're in Salem, Massachusetts.
People can move. Eh?
I mean...
Hollywood!
True.
Oh my gosh. No, I mean, honestly, though, like, I actually also noticed something new. I didn't realize that when Winifred walks in to the party, the guy singing I Put a Spell on You, and she, like, downloads the song in her mind. She, like, notices the camera stops, and she, like, makes a face when he's singing the song. So when she pops in later on, she's doing her version of the song. I'm like, oh, shit. That was actually, because I was like, how the fuck does she know this song from years? And then she's like, oh, she's supernatural, and just heard it once, did her version of it to put a spell on people. Movie!
Gotcha. I was like,
smart! Smart script writer.
Okay, I thought, okay.
Why, did you not catch that?
No, I did, I caught it, but I thought it was something else. I thought she was just like, I didn't interpret it that way. I interpreted it differently.
Oh, okay.
But, that's interesting.
Yeah, that, to me, that's how he took it.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I mean, I guess kind of downloading it is a fun way to put it. But then there was, like, I think they all kind of learned a lot. It was, like, a crash course.
On,
like, 20th century. Because later in the movie, like, at the very, very end, when they're, like, driving away after mm-hmm. They all, like, punk them out and make them think the sun is coming up. She's, like, flying on her broom, like, next to car.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, is making, like, pulling, like making, like, police jokes.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you don't know what the fuck the police are.
She's like, let me check your driver's permit. I'm like, what?
You don't know what a fucking driver's permit is?
Yeah.
Like, you are from the 17th century, ma'am.
This is, like, some pre-Shrek humor right there.
Yeah. So that was the one joke that took me out of the movie.
Really? A little bit. I can definitely see that like, being the case.
Those two jokes kind of, like, took me out of it because mm-hmm. I was just like, there is no explanation as to why you should know those jokes.
True. But, I mean... Yeah, I don't really care that much.
I still continued. Like, yeah. I was just like, that's weird, moving on.
But
like,
it is totally a little inconsistent because the film kind of plays it straight and goofy.
Yeah.
But, like, not that absurdly goofy.
Yeah.
Except for those couple of
but
scenes.
But also not that, like, straight edge straight.
Yeah, yeah,
so
exactly.
So it's like, it's a weird middle ground.
It's a mix, yeah. By the way, another thing before we go wrap this up, I also loved... Okay, so Thackeray Binks got fucking owned, basically, at the beginning.
Yes.
There's nothing he could have done about that. He got really bold-headed or whatever. I like Max as a protagonist, just remembering all the stuff you're talking about them leaving, because he outwits them,
mm-hmm.
like, a lot throughout
several
the film.
Times. In the very beginning, with the water,
mm-hmm.
with the car lights. And
yeah.
Like,
that makes him a pretty good protagonist. I think that's why I liked him, because I was like, oh, shit, he's clever. I mean, he's Californian, whatever, he's kind of a bitch sometimes, but, like... He's clever.
He uses his wits. He's,
mm-hmm.
he's very, yeah. I mean, and I think he realizes he can outsmart them by using 20th century, like, you know, like, obviously they don't realize this technology exists,
mm-hmm.
you know?
They'd have to interpret it some way, and
yeah.
it's usually in the way that they know. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I mean, this movie,
or the
again,
way that he tells them.
That way he tells them exactly.
He's just, if he's just, like, you know... acid rain or whatever the
yeah.
fuck, and it's just like, ah,
and they're
water.
Like, ah!
Yeah. And then she's like, ah, oh, 'tis the water! And
yeah.
then they're like, ah!
'Tis the water! Oh my god, this fucking movie!
So that was cool. But then, and I think it's an interesting, like, comparison between Max and Thackeray,
mm-hmm.
because Thackeray is just, like, looking, and then he's, like, kind of sneaking, but then, like, he doesn't know what else to do, so he
yeah.
just, like, yells and, like, tries to direct the attention away from his sister, and that's what ultimately gets him, like, fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, which, by the way, that beginning spell, like, the camera, when it's, like, all three of them, like, looking directly
yeah.
at the camera, the point of view.
Ooh.
Like, that was,
and
like...
Yeah.
That is one of my favorite shots in the whole movie.
Dude, yeah, that's pretty bad. I didn't even think about that until you just did it right now.
It's
yeah,
it's one of my favorite things. Like, it's one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. Like, it's so cool.
Dude, Ortega knew how to move that goddamn camera.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, he did a good job
yeah.
here.
They did a really good job with like camera angles and stuff in the movie, just to like direct attention. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, it's a very cinematically well done film for the budget that they had.
For the budget, and also like to keep a child's attention.
Yes,
or precisely. a drunk adult.
It's for everybody, guys. It's for everybody.
So that was really cool. And then, but anyway, what I was going to say about like the comparison between Max and Thackeray was that Max like kind of took the advice of Thackeray also by the end of the movie, because he was like basically willing to sacrifice himself for
Danny go.
Don't let Danny go. Which was, I thought was really sweet also.
This just, it wraps up so well, dude. Thackeray's allowed to die.
Yeah.
The fucking parents finally finished their party, had the best party of their lives.
Yeah. Like that ending when they're like stumbling out and they're just like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
But I mean, like, this movie, it's happy, it's sentimental, it's like, it's all those things.
Yeah.
Like, there's something special about it, I gotta say. I don't know. So, last question here. What would you rate this film out of 5 Airheaded Virgins?
I will give this movie, on our 50th episode, my very first, 5 out of 5 Airheaded Virgins.
Damn. You hear that, guys? Very first 5 out of 5 Airheaded Virgins.
On the show, on our 50th episode.
And even though I hand out these fives like candy, I'm gonna do it again. This is a 5. This is 5 Airheaded Virgins no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, light that fucking candle. This shit is awesome.
Oh my gosh. There was like a sticker or a t-shirt or something that was just like, that said like, I lit the black flame candle or something. And
oh my God. Get it.
I love it. I want it.
You're like, yeah, nothing happened because I bone.
But quite a bit. But
yeah. But there you go.
No, it was just, I mean, not for me, but like, I thought it was
a good shirt.
I just thought it was a funny shirt. But no, I just think that this movie is fantastic, super nostalgic. If you have not seen it and it's been a couple of years, or if you haven't, if you're like me and you're worried that like the film doesn't hold up to your expectations of your memory of it as a child or as a young adult, kind of teenager, whatever, watch it. It's so fucking good. Do yourself a favor this Halloween season and watch Hocus Pocus.
Dude, it's $10 at Best Buy. $10 for the Blu-ray with the digital copy.
You can
copy.
Also, it's also like $3.99 on like Vudu or something.
Yeah, you can
like,
rent it. You can own it for a few dollars more.
Yeah. You can buy it forever.
Buy now.
But in that's our first ad. No. Yeah.
Sponsored by Hocus Pocus.
But no, so that was 1993's Hocus Pocus, directed by Kenny Ortega.
Happy 50th episode.
Happy 50th episode, guys.
Thank you for fucking spending all this time with us and coming back in October and listening to us more, which is nice.
It's been really nice. We've been so excited about this episode. We've been so excited about just what we have coming up. We have a couple of pretty cool episodes to wrap up October.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it'll be good. It'll be a good time. And then, just for the 50th episode, I did not... Well, I mean, I kind of knew we were going to make it, but, like, just the fact that we made it is really cool. Anthony and I have actually not lost any ounce of enthusiasm or steam for this project, and so...
No, we keep wanting to do more with it.
Yeah.
Which, again, actually, thank you guys for the very positive reception through text messages and regular messages, whatever, for Resident Evil. We tried something different, and you gave a really positive reception, which I appreciate.
I got many also positive text messages as well, saying I love the Resident Evil episode, so kudos to Anthony and Alex for that.
Other Alex, yes.
It's not me. I'm speaking in third person.
Alex is great.
Alex is awesome. But yeah, you guys did great. And it was a wonderful episode. And I am very happy with it. So
thank you. And then thank you again. Just again, guys. 50th episode. We want to keep doing 50 more. And 50 after that. So
that would be amazing. So we want to keep doing this for as long as humanly possible. As long as,
There are horror movies.
and there are so many more for us to get through. We have a long, 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 long list. We have the next couple of months planned out, like you heard us mention earlier. Mm-hmm. We literally have through December planned out.
Yeah. Oh, we gotta work on January now.
It's yeah.
There. Ah, fucking A. Anyways.
But the point is we plan things out super far in advance. We wanna keep putting out material for you. We're starting, you know, to think about like the future of like this podcast and what we wanna do in the future, you know, with other podcasts and other projects. So we're already, you know,
gears are switching. Yeah. Turning.
Huh?
Gears are turning. How's the wisdom expression?
The gears are turning. We're doing good things, and it's all because of the amount of support and praise that you guys have been giving us, and it means the absolute world to us. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you a lot. Absolutely. Well, it's time.
I think that's it. So if you like what you heard, please, please, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It does actually help keep us afloat on the iTunes algorithm or whatever the fuck is going on these days.
Yeah.
If you also want to stay up to date with all of the latest and greatest for the Horrible People's Podcast, you can find us on social media. You can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. Or you can find us on Twitter at Horror People Pod. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Nice. All right.
That is about it. I think that's it.
Yeah, if you're a virgin, don't light any candles.
Yeah,
any.
Don't stay away from any candles.
You never know what you'll summon.
You'll never know any of that. And have a fantastic lead up to Halloween. I hope you guys are doing some fun, spooky shit.
And watch Hocus Pocus.
And please watch Hocus Pocus. And until then, next week, we are going to be covering a fun... We're going back.
It's not fun, but yeah.
It's not fun.
It's very hard-hitting.
It's very hard-hitting. It's very sad.
Very sad.
We are going back to foreign horror.
Oh. For a director, we are going to cover a few times this season, so watch out.
So I have my set. So this is our first instance of covering this director. He's amazing. He's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited. We have one next week planned for him, and then I have another episode planned for him later this season. So there's at least two right there.
Yeah, keep that in mind.
So we will see you next week with that. So that's your hint. It is a foreign film.
Gotcha. Yes. All right, guys. Well, and then Halloween, of course, is after that. So
yes. Bye. And we all you know what's happening. You know what's happening.
Yeah. We've made this deal before. Come on.
Yeah. So until then, have a great rest of your week, and we will catch you next time.
Peace out, horror bees. Wholesome one this time. See.
Bye. Bye, guys.